the CU 2.0 podcast.
I think that's one of the things that is maybe missing today, and not hearing as many stories of collaboration and group buying and group strategies as there used to be. And I've actually had some anecdotal evidence that people talk about, hey, we wish we could get together in a group and just sit down and talk and figure out, you know, what opportunities do we have out there. But it's hard to get past the overlap in memberships and the growth factors. And I think one of the other things is you're seeing the change in leadership at credit unions that's been occurring for I don't know how many years now. There's a lot of new leaders coming into the credit unions from the banking industry. There's not been as much homegrown replacement of CEOs as we talked about trying to develop 20 years ago.
Quick now, why did BECU, the big Washington state credit unions, take its start? Was it to make loans to Boeing, the aircraft company? Was it to make home loans to citizens throughout the state of Washington? Was it to help factory workers at Boeing be able to buy their first set of tools, which Boeing required them to have on their first day of work? Which of the three? Take a guess. Pretty obvious which of the three it's going to be. The big BECU credit union, a credit union, it's top one of the top five in the nation, got its start when a small group of Boeing employees got together after reading a story in Reader's Digest magazine about credit unions, pooled some money together, and started what amounted to a tool loan operation. That tool loan operation grew and grew and grew. But think, who else is going to make loans to that incoming factory worker? Local bank? Don't be ridiculous. A loan shark? Maybe, but at what interest rate? Credit union was a godsend for that worker. A great, great, great thing for the community. A good thing for Boeing, too, the company. What a wonderful origin story for a credit union. It's a feel-good podcast. Our guest today, Gary Oakland, longtime CEO, 30-plus years of BECU. Took it from a couple hundred million in assets to over 10 billion. He's a big credit union booster, and he has a secret to success. It's a very easy to remember recipe. Put the member first. Put the member first. Put the member first. Do that, and he's convinced that credit union will thrive. Is he a fan of technology? Listen to the podcast. You'll hear what he has to say about that. Keeping in mind that BECU has always had a good reputation for its technology. You might be surprised by his attitude towards technology. What's he most proud of? It's a question I don't ask too many guests, but I asked him. He said, this is interesting, he's proud he left BECU with a small credit union attitude and a big credit union body. He did indeed. As I say, it's a feel-good podcast. He raises some concerns about the future of credit unions, has some worries. Mainly, though, this is a guy who believes that when the member is served, the credit union will thrive. When the member is served, the credit union will thrive. Listen up. This, of course, is the CU 2.0 podcast. This is your host, Robert McGarvey. The guest again, Gary Oakland, retired CEO of BECU. How big were the assets of BECU when you took over as CEO?
I think they were around 700, as I recall. I think when I first got to the credit union, we were about 170. And then when I became CEO, I think it was around 700.
And what were they when you left?
A little over 10 billion.
And now they're about 17 billion.
That's probably correct.
That's according to NCUA numbers.
Yep.
how did it grow from 10 to 17? And I realize you left, so I'm asking you to tell me from sitting in your armchair how the heck they did it.
Momentum.
Good. That's the answer I was hoping for, the big mo.
Yeah, there was that. And they did go ahead and were able to expand a little bit into South Carolina when Boeing Company moved some plant down there. And then also did some in Eastern Washington, over in the Spokane area, which was kind of in the plan, but they acted on it. And I think just offering a good, solid member experience.
Okay, that's the thing that intrigues me. If I call up at random 100 credit union CEOs today and say, is providing a good, solid member experience your central mission? 100 of them are going to say, oh, absolutely. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I think so.
What was the difference when you said it?
Well, we lived it. It was one of those that I didn't know what I was getting into when I became CEO. I was 33 and I didn't know what was going on. But we had a lot of good things going for us, from the standpoint of having a solid foundation of member service and what it's all about, the member. And we just grew from there. It was never about getting more numbers. We really didn't operate from a set of textbook type of formulas. We really wanted to do more about walking the member path. What's in the best interest of the member, and how can we deliver that to the member, rather than trying to shoot for any particular growth targets or ROAs or anything like that. Operated a lot more, I guess, from the gut.
The exact same time, we have two institutions, two CEOs, roughly the same age, both in mid-sized states, Jim Blaine in North Carolina, you in Washington State. And you both grow, and you're different guys, you both grow huge credit unions, just, top five credit unions. But mathematically, that shouldn't have happened in either case. And I'm not asking you to address Jim's case, but how did you do it? Why weren't you contained by the big banks, for instance?
There were a couple of things that happened early on. There was the Demonetization Act of 1980 or something like that, where suddenly a whole slew of new products became available for credit unions. And so we were able to expand our exposure there. Obviously, some of the field of membership changes that went on from into once a member, always a member. What was the name of that Oklahoma City bank? A bunch of banks got involved in. And that was in the 384 time period, I think. And CFirst was one of them. And CFirst was the number one market share in the Northwest. Well, they went away, and we had all of these new products. And so we got a lot of a growth burst as a result of that. So between new products being available and kind of this void in the marketplace suddenly with the loss of first CFirst and then Rainier and People's Bank and things like that, we were a great place for members to come to.
At that point, was your field of membership still restricted essentially to Boeing employees?
Boeing employees and their families at that point.
Right. Okay.
Right.
That's still a fairly narrow field of membership.
Yeah, although, and we had a very strict adherence to that via the board in particular, because they were all Boeing employees. They wanted to, actually at one point, if the discussion went around that if the Boeing company ever got merged or went away, then, well, we'd just liquidate the credit union. There'd be no reason for us to be around. So that was some of the early things that I had the opportunity of dealing with. In one of our first planning sessions, I showed him that, of course, Boeing has a long history of hiring and then laying off and hiring and laying off. And as a result, what the board used to call peer members, being Boeing employees, within a year or two, just through natural circumstances, we're going to become less than half of our membership. So it forced them to take a look and realize, you know what? We're an employer. We're part of the community. It's not just a benefit for the Boeing employees. It is a benefit for the community. And it opened up and gave us the opportunity of looking for new ways of serving a broader base of members.
Yeah, you reminded me. I'd forgotten that in those days, defense contracting was a very cyclical business with booms and busts. Yep. Silicon Valley was very heavily dependent on defense contracting in the 80s. And it had big highs and big lows.
High employment of 120,000, and within 18 months it would be down to 40,000. For the longest time, if the member was no longer employed at the Boeing company, up until early 80s, they had to remove their membership also.
Wow, now that is a strict interpretation.
Yes, yeah, it was very strict. And then, I don't even remember what year it was now, but then the state legislature opened it up to a statewide field of membership for credit unions and for state chartered credit unions in Washington. Probably early 90s.
You also benefited at that point, I imagine, by the demise of thrifts, savings and loans.
Yes. The big surge there actually came with the demise of Washington Mutual.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that was, 06 or whatever it was. And what one of the big changes that I noted was how credit unions used to be basically a benefit for the employees of a small group of an employer or some organization. And so it took a long time for us to really be able to get out into the community. And we've been able to do that a little bit. When Washington Mutual, who was very involved in community activism, one of the things that we decided we wanted to do, we're not going to be able to fill that void, but we're going to fill as much of it as we possibly can. And so we really became much more involved and aware of opportunities in the community. And so we focused on education, housing.
You also did, I found this in my research this morning, played a very significant role in the growth of a credit union aimed at low-income people called Express.
Express, right.
Where you gave them some money, you also gave them some expertise that enabled them to, according to their CEO, really not just survive, but thrive.
Yes. We actually did a couple. We did Express, and we did Tulip down in Olympia. Yeah, trying to get the smaller credit unions involved, because that's one of the things that we also tried to do is once we broke out of the box and said, okay, we can actually do advertising, we can get on TV, radio, billboards, and things like that. And for the first number of years, the emphasis was more around the value of credit unions rather than the value of BECU. And so we did a lot of more generic type of advertising, which, you know, we talked with the other credit unions in the area and let them know so that they could piggyback on it.
Then did you shift to putting BECU first?
Well, no. I think we made a shift where there was more emphasis on BECU, but it was all member first. That's still what they're doing out there today. It's more about, you belong, you own it. It's centric around the member, And that's just what's unique about BECU. And then if you want to carry it the next step, that's what's unique about credit unions.
I get that, but I don't think, I think many credit unions don't walk that talk. They talk it, but they don't walk it.
From an advertising standpoint, there weren't many credit unions doing any advertising. And they're starting to do that now. And I think that's good. And I think that's one of the things that is maybe missing today, and not hearing as many stories of collaboration and group buying and group strategies as there used to be. And I've actually had some anecdotal evidence that people talk about, hey, we wish we could get together in a group and just sit down and talk and figure out, what opportunities do we have out there. But it's hard to get past the overlap in memberships and the growth factors. And I think one of the other things is you're seeing the change in leadership at credit unions that's been occurring for, I don't know how many years now. There's a lot of new leaders coming into the credit unions from the banking industry. There's not been as much homegrown replacement of CEOs as we talked about trying to develop 20 years ago.
Now, your credit union probably developed a fair number of CEO candidates. What happened to them?
There's a number that are either out there still as CEOs, have retired.
Yeah, that's good. I asked Jim Blaine the same question, and he rattled off a half dozen state employees, alums, who essentially, he was in the job as long as you were. There was no place for them to go, so they went out. And he said he encouraged them to go out, and they went out and they thrived and did good for the credit union movement, not just, and also for themselves, but they were good leaders.
I remember having that conversation with the board where they were saying, well, how are these people developing? And we said, we really would like to see more of our alums go out and take over, become CEOs at other credit unions, because we think we have tried to create a mentality, a mindset that it is about the member, it is what credit unions are all about, and that's going to help all credit unions and going to help consumers.
You're making a good point. I hear the same thing from leaders in the natural food grocery co-op business, where they're pondering what happens as more people, executives, come in from the for-profit supermarket world. In part, it's triggered by growing size and complexity. In fact, in Seattle, there's a giant natural food co-op.
Yeah,
that's one of the poster children for the whole business. But it's a level of complexity way beyond the tiny little storefront that sold brown rice 50 years ago.
Yep.
So where do you get these people? Well, you get them from Safeway, man. But do they have the right mentality? Some, I'm sure, do. But it's a conversation you hear quite a bit in that world.
Yeah, well, I think PCC got theirs from Starbucks.
Now, when you took over as CEO, the primary industry in Washington State was Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Scoop Jackson was referred to as the senator from Boeing. People who liked him said that. People who didn't like him said that. But that's what he is known as. Whereas now I think of Washington as Microsoft, Amazon, Starbucks. It's a much more diverse economy. Did that economic growth help you?
Yes, it did. But I think something that I think that helped us more was the Nordstroms, the REIs.
Oh, wow.
Because they also had a customer service first mentality.
Well, REI is, as you know, a co-op. And in fact,
Right.
when you walk into REI, it's one of the few places I walk into where they say, "Are you a member of the co-op? Would you like to be one?"
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and from a co-op standpoint, we had Group Health up here for years. That was one of the first co-op hospitals and medical centers. I think that, you know, when you had a Starbucks and a Nordstrom, and then the, and you know, Boeing to a certain extent, they were all focused on, you know, quality of product, quality of the member, of the customer experience. And it made it easier for us to instill that into the rest of the organization, saying, you see, these are successful organizations that are local and right here, and they're doing well because they care about the member experience or the customer experience.
Now, people have told me that one of your philosophies when you were CEO was not to put technology first, that you were aware of what's happening in technology and looking for what might benefit members, but always kind of prove it to me, show it to me, show me it's going to work for members. Would you say that's true?
Yes, if you interpret it properly. Actually, I think for the longest time, our IT department kind of ran what the credit union was going to do. Okay, here's a product we want to come up with. IT, can you do it or not? And if they said yes, then great. If they said no, then it had to be dropped. We changed IT leaders, and when I was looking for the next IT leader, I was looking for somebody first in out of the either healthcare industry or entertainment industry, or if need be, from the financial services industry. But that was the third preference. We ended up getting somebody from the health industry, and the reason I wanted, you know, the reason I was interested in the health industry is this was back in 1999. We made a change of IT people 6 months before Y2K. One of the reasons I was interested in the health industry is who has more information gathered that's of a sensitive nature than financial institutions other than the health industry, and how are they dealing with it? So I wanted somebody that kind of had that thought process to think in terms of how to protect the information that we do have. Or if that wasn't possible, I was interested in the entertainment industry to find out, how do you get people's attention via technology, you know, through the games and so. Let's not think in terms of IT as a gatekeeper, but let's think in terms of IT as how to provide what our members are either want or are going to want.
No, that just, I remember talking some years ago with a very senior guy at a money center bank, and I asked him, he ran the development of their first mobile app, and I asked him what his philosophy was. He said, well, two things. A, I didn't want to hire anybody from financial services. I wanted to hire game developers.
Yeah.
And I said, don't you need financial services expertise? He said, what business do you think we're in? We can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is your board... Was your board cooperative in technology transformation?
Yes, we were very lucky. I think both from a board standpoint and a member standpoint, because the roots of the credit union, since we had that restricted field of membership for so long, were Boeing employees, and that's the aerospace industry. And generally speaking, you've got people that are comfortable with technology, because they work with it every day and are always kind of looking forward, because, you know, when they start developing an airplane, they've got 10, 15 years before the first one's going to roll off. And so they've got to be thinking in terms of the long term rather than what can we get tomorrow. And so the members felt that way, and actually as we were going through and developing new technology, we had members calling up and saying, you know, I found this, that you're working on something, and I think you ought to try this instead. And they'd be very active in giving us their opinion. Sometimes it worked.
Do you think as the SEGs have lost the central role in most credit unions, do you think that's had a change in boards? Yeah, you're mentioning the board you had. I'd interviewed not too long ago the guy who's the CEO of Partners, which is the Disney credit union. And his board is just outstanding. Disney executives really, it's obviously, or I'm guessing, it seemed obvious to me that it's considered sort of a nice thing on your resume if you're a rising Disney guy to be on the board of this credit union. Whereas most of the people I know who are trying to fill out boards are really struggling. They're not seeing that level of competence, alertness, interest, blah, blah, blah.
Well, our board was always, you know, for the longest time, it was essentially all Boeing employees, mid to upper management, a lot of emphasis on finance. And over time, we started saying, well, gee, we need to get an HR person coming in. We need to do some other type of things. Then we started saying, now we need to have a board that reflects more of the community rather than just the Boeing company. At this point in time, I think there's only one or two that have any tie to the Boeing company at all that's on the current board. And they are people that used to work at the Boeing company but have since gone on to something else. The other thing that that they've done is, you know, really search for people that really will be able to add something to the conversation. They try to get one or two people from other types of co-ops. Try to get some entrepreneurs. Try to get other representatives of the local governments or the political system. And they've been successful in that. But one of the things that we have up here, it was something that we got past the state legislature in the last year that I was at the credit union, is the ability to pay boards.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I know federal charters cannot pay, but some states allow that.
Yeah, and that was passed in, 2011 or 12, I don't remember. Two things in that last bill was, one, the ability to pay board members, and two, to not require a monthly board meeting. Because what we found is those monthly board meetings got the board diving way too deep into the operations. Yes, they do pay the board, I don't know, $15,000 or something like that. But they've been able to do that. And
now, had you done succession planning?
We had, although one of the things that I told the board and the entire EMT team, because there were three or four that went through the process of becoming the next CEO, that I believe that we have people on board that could take my position, but I thought it was the responsibility of the board to do a nationwide search because of the stature of the organization, the stature of the credit of BECU amongst credit unions. And that if they didn't do a full-blown search, that I think they would have been shirking their responsibility. Because I remember I had no idea I was even under consideration back in 1985 when they made the appointment. So we kind of set out to saying, you know, we've got plenty of qualified people here, but I think that it's important that they do a full search.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, how did your wife know that you were going to get that job before you did?
She reads people very well, and so she was not, I guess, as surprised as I was.
Well, I read in a newspaper story, I think, that she had said to you some years before you got the job that, hey, you know you're going to be the next CEO here.
That she brought that to my attention, and I said, oh, no. You know, look, we've got so-and-so across the hall. And that was actually one of the concerns that prompted me to have the board do a full search, because I don't really think they looked very far back then. And nice from an ego standpoint, but I'm not sure that they had been exposed to what some of the reality of credit unions were, because at that point it was still very Boeing company. I think we had just instituted once a member, always a member. So I think that flattering that they didn't think they had to go very far, but I think 25 years later, I think the organization was such that it needed to do a wider search.
Well, the prestige and size of the institution when you retired meant that you could attract nationwide candidates.
Right.
There'd be very few people in the credit union industry who, if asked, would you be interested in talking about being CEO of BECU? Most of them would say, tell me about it. Not necessarily saying they'd commit to it, but tell me about it. Yeah, I'm interested. Yeah. Tell me. Whereas when you took the job in 1985 or 86, you didn't have the same sort of name recognition.
Oh, no. That's true.
So a very different picture. Now, in the research I did, I read something that was news to me, which is no big deal. A lot of things are news to me, but kind of puzzled me. It said that you were involved in the mid-1990s in setting up a shared ATM network with a few other credit unions that kind of morphed into becoming the co-op network. Is that an accurate account?
No.
That's no. Why I asked. That's why.
Yeah, I think the co-op was around. What happened in the mid '90s was the Boeing company merged with McDonnell Douglas and Rockwell, and of course, each of those organizations had one or more credit unions associated with McDonnell Douglas or Rockwell, and there was a Boeing helicopter and. There was a McDonnell Douglas in Arizona. In any case, so there were seven of us, I think, seven credit unions that we got together, and we called it BACU, Boeing Affiliated Credit Unions, and said, let's not talk about merging, although they all thought that that's what I was coming to the table for, but we weren't coming to the table to merge. We were coming to say, as people get shifted around between Boeing Seattle and McDonnell Douglas St. Louis and Rockwell, let's let them come into each of our credit unions and not have to change their accounts. So basically a shared branching, but only within those seven credit unions, because some of them weren't part of the overall shared branching network. So we called it the Boeing Affiliated Credit Unions and worked to make sure that there was a seamless transition for current and new Boeing employees as a result of the mergers could use their Rockwell account at a BECU in Seattle or in St. Louis for the McDonnell Douglas. So that was what that, so then we went and talked to all of the heads at Boeing and the representatives from the other places. And we got, it was a interesting gathering of people and ideas, and they were suspicious at first that it was all about us wanting to merge them all in. And once they got it through their heads that no, we're not interested in the merger aspect, it worked very successfully, and I think we leveraged each other into a whole new level of member experience.
That was cool. That was a good member service. And so that had nothing to do with becoming the shared branching network or the ATM.
No, shared branching network was in place at the time. It was still pretty young, but most of the other credit unions involved were not members of. So we were a member of it, but you know, rather than force them to join the shared branch network, we said, let's do this amongst the seven of us, and I think ultimately it got most of them to join the Shared Grants Network so that it was available.
So what are you most proud of in your career as you look back?
I think the legacy that I'm most proud of is the attitude and culture that the credit union, that I left the credit union with. Because it was a small credit union attitude in a big credit union body. And I've heard this a number of times whenever I get together with Benson. He says, you know, I can't thank you enough for culture that you left. And the culture was all built around, it's the member first, it's always about the member, walk the member path and find out what it is they want and need and find a way to deliver it. And it was also about the employees. I know our HR person and I always had would always get into a little spat whenever we talked, whenever I said, well, you know, what's the member first? She said, no, it's the employee first. You're not going to have good employee service or member service if you don't have employees that are willing to deliver it. So we had fun with that. The family values that was part of the culture, taking the time that was necessary or that was desirable to spend with the family, to do the things that are important at the family level.
Well, BECU is one of the institutions I view as really committed to the idea of a credit union.
Mm-hmm.
One belief I have is that really there isn't much of a credit union movement anymore, but there are some credit unions that are doing their very best to live a credit union movement, and they're making a difference. There just don't happen to be a majority of credit unions that are doing that, in my opinion. BECU is one that's doing it, still today.
Good. I'm glad to hear that is living on.
Do you think 20 years from now there will be credit unions in the U.S.?
Yes, I think so. And maybe it's more of a hope than a known pattern to say here's what they're going to look like. Because then they will look different. But I think there's a need, and I think that there's enough of a passion out there amongst a lot of people that they will do what's necessary to make credit unions survive.
Well, to me, you know, the credit union business started basically serving people that banks didn't want to serve. That's essentially what Filene was wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
And now many credit unions want to compete with banks for customers. That's interesting. I guess I'm just something of a traditionalist, which isn't to say that the credit unions say, sorry, no, you're too middle class for us. I do wonder what's going on with credit unions.
Well, it's a little bit different with BECU, the Boeing Employee Credit Union. It started off with 9 people that got together and each put in their 25 cents and they read about it in a Reader's Digest article about credit unions and got together and started it up. But the primary thing there was when Boeing hired new employees, the employees had to bring their own tools, provide their own tools for the job. And so it really started as a tool loan. We did tool loans for new employees, or if they needed to replace tools, there'd be a truck that walked or that drove through the plants, and people would go buy their tools and finance it at the credit union. So that was really the start of ours. But I can't say that even then these people were necessarily impoverished or
they weren't impoverished, but you
right.
could not at that point in time have gone to the local bank and said, hey, could you lend me $100 to buy some new tools for my new
yeah,
job?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, the bank would have said, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember my father grousing in the 50s about how You can't borrow money because if you need it, no one will lend it to you.
Yep.
If you, it's, which was true for middle-class people at that point in time. So what you were doing was filling a dramatically important need that a bank did not want to fill.
Yep.
And it was good for Boeing. It was good for the employee. It was good for the institution in many cases, the BECU. I mean, that to me is a brilliant credit union origination story.
Yep.
And I love that they found out how to do it by reading Reader's Digest.
We have a copy of the original Reader's Digest book.
That's just great. Before we go, the CU 2.0 podcast is looking for a few good sponsors to help us spread the word about the digital transformation of credit unions. You could be one of them. Contact Robert McGarvey for details at rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. First come, first served. Again, that's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. The CU 2.0 podcast.